This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at HomeTeam.com.
Let me know who you are. What are your goals? What is it that you're trying to accomplish? And if you focus on solving the other person's problem first, then you can solve your own problem in the process.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome back to another wonderful episode of the Color of Money podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Daniel Dixon. We have a very special guest with us today. Her name is Melissa Dorman, and let me tell you how I met her. I know on one of our most recent episodes, we did a whole thing about my TED Talk, and I actually met Melissa at TED Talk. Melissa did a TED Talk on seller financing and opened my eyes wide up. You know, a lot of times we think that in order to gain assets or even businesses, we need a lot of capital. But her TED Talk was about how you don't need a whole lot of capital. There is seller financing options. And so listen up, if you have a dream in your belly, you have a vision, you have goals on your vision board, you want to buy stuff, but you ain't got no money, this is the episode for you. And so we're going to invite Melissa to one, just if you could introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got into talking about this whole thing.
Yeah. Thank you all so much for having me. It's an honor to be here. So right now I'm a top broker out of Portland, Oregon. I had a larger team, but just kind of winding that down and getting really focused on this project that I'm really passionate about, which is seller financing. And I got into seller financing actually because my dad got Alzheimer's and I was a social worker for many years. And I realized while I could help people on the margins, I wasn't able to help my own family and I needed to change my relationship with money. So I started learning about real estate investing, and it didn't take long until I stumbled into seller financing because it's very different than all the types of real estate investing. It's about creating win partnerships with people that are in your community. And as I shared on the TED stage, I bought my first seller finance property with only $500 out of pocket. I bought a triplex in a really great neighborhood in Portland, and it built a unique partnership with one of my neighbors. And I created a retirement plan for them, which they made hundreds of thousands of dollars doing it this way. And I created a retirement plan for me by a cash flowing asset that I now have in my portfolio.
I think where a lot of people struggle with seller financing is sourcing the deals, structuring the deals, the complexity of having an idea of what do you want exactly. So how did you go through your first deal? How did you get that experience on what a good seller financing deal actually looks like?
Yeah, I had gone to a boot camp and it really started with my mindset, really opening my eyes to the possibility that there were lots of people out there that would want to do this kind of deal. And I would door knock and I would just try to find people who wanted to sell a property to me. And I eventually stumbled into a conversation with a bankruptcy attorney because I was trying to call his client who turned out to be dead. So it was a little bit awkward. He's telling me his client's dead. I'm talking to an attorney and we actually hit it off because he was a bankruptcy attorney and I was working with people who were in foreclosure. And in my social work background, we both had a passion for helping people out of tough situations. So we built this friendship and a few months into it, he texted me and said, "Hey, I want to sell my triplex. Would you tell me how much it's worth?" And, you know, as a realtor, I said, "Sure." And I looked it up. And in that moment, I saw that he had owned it for 15 years and I knew he had equity, which was the main ingredient you're looking for a seller finance transaction. And I went and walked the units with him. And before I could even say anything, he turned to me, talk about manifestation, and said, "I want to seller finance this to somebody." And so, you know, really, it's just getting out there and meeting lots and lots of people and developing relationships and waiting for that opportunity to say, "Yes, I want to be that person. I want to partner with you."
So let's talk about that deal. How did that deal get structured? What did that look like?
Yeah. So initially, he wanted 10% down, which is very reasonable for a non-owner occupied, you know, triplex, mm-hmm. which would have been about $75,000. So I asked him, you know, he's an attorney. I asked him, "What would it cost for you to foreclose on me?" And in Oregon, that's $15,000. And I said, "Great, let's make that the down payment. If I don't pay you, you can use my own money to foreclose on me." And he thought about it and he went, "Okay, yeah, why not?" And so it was going to be $15,000. Now, of course, I didn't have $15,000. I was broke as a joke. I was just coming out of being a social worker. And so I called some friends and I raised some capital and he let me do that. And so I ended up just bringing $7,000 to closing, and we delayed the first mortgage payment to him by 2 months, which allowed me to lease up two units and recoup $6,500 of my $7,000. So by the time I paid him my first payment, I was only $500 into a triplex.
That's so cool. What kind of interest rate, loan term, what did that look like?
Yeah, we did interest-only payments, which I think is a really important thing in these transactions, because then the seller gets to maximize their tax savings. They're only paying taxes on principal. And then I was able to maximize my cash flow. So it's a real win. I'm keeping all of that equity that I would be giving to him every month, and I'm keeping it in my pocket and able to reinvest or take care of the tenants. So we did that. We also did the delay of payments by 2 months just to give me time to lease up two units, because I was so broke. I literally didn't have money to pay him in those 2 months. So he allowed me 2 months to get those leased up. And then the interest rate, we actually made it, it would go up a little bit each year. So it was 0.25% every year. And it started at 5%. And when we got to about 3 years into it, it was during COVID and rates were like 3.5%. And so I ended up doing a really cool deal with him. I ended up saying, hey, I owe you $700,000. Would you be willing to let me take that note and cut it in half into two portions, each for $350,000. And I'll put one of those in second position on another one of my properties. And then what I did is a cash out refinance on the subject triplex. And I pulled out $205,000 and I bought a 20 unit apartment complex in Ohio, seller financed. So that $500 turned into 23 units over the course of 3 years.
That's so cool.
Where did you learn to think like this?
I went to a boot camp, and I have like about a handful of other friends who went to a similar boot camp, and it teaches you this way.
Girl, we've all been to a boot camp, okay? We all went to a class, we all went to a training, we all went to a boot camp, and we did not come out thinking like that.
Yeah, it's like a really unique way. You know, it was quite a paradigm shift for me, because I used to think about real estate in terms of collecting doors. You know, like the real estate itself is the vehicle for building wealth. But the paradigm shift for me was to recognize that actually debt, real estate was debt's vehicle. I needed to collect real estate to get good debt. And that debt was what created my wealth. And when I had that paradigm shift, I wasn't just looking for houses. I was looking for people who wanted to create partnerships. And when you do that, you can get so flexible. You can manipulate the notes, you can chop them up, you can move them around. And all of a sudden, you're not having to deal with banks. You can get creative and bring everyone for the ride so that they can also build wealth alongside you.
You really just said something there. You said, I wasn't looking for property. I was looking for relationships, basically.
Yes.
You're looking for people. Mm-hmm. And so you are out, like a lot of real estate agents are, lead generating, but you're not lead generating for the listing. You're not lead generating to help somebody buy a house. You're lead generating for relationships of business partnerships.
Yeah, it's about social capital, not money capital.
Tell me about social capital, because this podcast, of course, is about building wealth. And some people might think that when we say wealth, we're just talking about money. We're not. There is social wealth, right? There is physical wealth. There is mental wealth. You know, so talk to me a little bit about what social wealth means to you when you say it's about those social wealth that you're building.
Yeah, I think my social work background, you know, I worked with people on the margins, and I really saw how society kind of leaves people behind. And so when I was thinking about how do I want to structure my real estate business, how do I do it in such a way that it's not win-lose? You know, it's not I found somebody, took advantage of a situation that they were down and out, and I got a bunch of equity and I flipped their house and I sold it and I made money. No judgment on that business model. I'm just saying for me, it didn't resonate. And so what I realized is, you know, as a broke social worker, I wasn't going to have a lot of capital, but I'm great with people. I'm here to heal. I love. I want to do good. Like, that is a big part of who I am. And so I learned from that boot camp that really it was about relationships. And so I just went out into the world trying to develop as many connections as possible, looking through that lens of who has equity. And when I found that person, I would just start to create a relationship, an authentic relationship, not leading with, I want to sell or finance, but leading with, let me know who you are. What are your goals? What is it that you're trying to accomplish? And if you focus on solving the other person's problem first, then you can solve your own problem in the process. But I think a lot of people see real estate transactions as just this one moment in time. And it's like, what can I get out of this person? What can I get over? How can I, you know, trick them essentially? And seller financing, that doesn't really work because it's a long-term partnership. So even if you tricked them before you close, they're going to figure it out over the next few years. So, you know, the motivation has to be very aligned with theirs.
So what does lead generation for you now look like?
Yeah. So this summer I ended up selling that 20 unit and I just on market a lot of times, honestly, there's a lot of plexes because they can't sell with the interest rates where they're at. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, send them an email and say, hey, look, how much equity do they have? Are they willing to get creative? Would they hold a note for 5 years? That's the most success I've had with a lot of clients. And then some of my coaching clients have brought me deals too. You know, they find something, they can't quite do it on their own. And so I'll jump in and try to negotiate, but it's everywhere. You know, like you can't just be like, this is the only way I find seller financing. It's a lens that you see your life through, and right. It can be as intentional as you want. You know, a lot of my deals came from sending direct mail, and some of them from seeing opportunities on the market and just negotiating through the other realtor even. And so it's just, it's a mindset.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit hometeam.com to learn more.
So when you think about how do you change the mind shift, is it a matter of finding a boot camp, finding a mentor? Is it coaching with you or somebody like you? A lot of what we identify in this wealth space has to really be the same deals that you give to other people that you just turn around and do for yourself in a creative way. How do you change that lens?
Yeah, I'm actually just finished writing a book that should be out in the spring. And one of the things that I realized is lacking in a lot of financial education. It's like we learn how to deconstruct our ideas about money, right? We learn these false beliefs that we've had and we sort of reorient our brains to our money. And you can learn the skills of seller financing, right? How to structure a transaction. Mm-hmm. But none of that is going to get you to being able to do it. And that is where self-determination comes in. And when I look through my own journey of how did I go from social worker making almost nothing to, you know, real estate mogul, it was a lot of the principles that I found in what's called the theory of self-determination. So it's competency, learning mastery over something and really falling in love with the process of learning. It's also reorienting to self. So, right, we are so conditioned to do things for other people, right? Teachers, parents, you should do this thing. You got to practice your instrument. Otherwise, you're not going to be loved or whatever it is, right? And we have to reorient to a self-driven motivation. I want this for my life. I want to do these things because that's what's going to give you the grit to get through it. And I think community is that other piece, you know, having other people around you who are thinking like this, who are doing these things, who are expanding their life. And that helps you hold the imagination to change your own identity and own sense of self.
I definitely agree with that, that people that are around you and learning from other people and being in spaces where you meet people like Melissa that I met who are doing big things that you've never heard of and being open to actually stepping out there and meeting people who are doing different things, having conversations. It's interesting. I mean, we've talked about lead generation because Daniel, you asked her what her lead generation looks like now. There's so many agents that just are so anti-lead gen and that literally is the name of the game. Whether you're, like you said, you're lead generating for relationships, but we try to get away from that so much. And it sounds like that's still the one thing.
There's so many ways to do it. You know, one of my coaching clients is having so much success out of Facebook Marketplace. Just like somebody's trying to rent out their place. You can tell they're struggling. They're not able to like quite, you know, make it pencil. Boom. That's a person who's primed to sell seller financing because they have a problem you're trying to solve. Mm-hmm. And so it's like just looking, who are the people who you can solve their problem and then developing that relationship and going slowly. You know, you don't want to be like on the first date, let's get married. You know, that's going to scare somebody. Mm-hmm. It's a big partnership. So you want to lead with like, tell me what it is you're trying to accomplish. You know, show up in a way that you're present for their needs and their wants and their desires. You build that trust. And then it's like, okay, I think I can solve this problem, but I have kind of a creative idea based on what you told me, right? It's their idea almost. Like it is, you're formulating it based on their needs and you send it back to them. And it's like, well, hard to disagree with how well you've listened to what they need, you know?
Why would a seller want to do that versus cashing out?
I think, you know, primarily most people have been conditioned to use a bank, right? It's safer. We have this like idea of Chase Bank or USA Bank or whatever, that are these icons, these symbols. And we live in a big world. It's hard to trust. Who do we know how to trust? You know, like we only have the capacity to build so many relationships in our life. And so it becomes easy to just like export that trust to a logo, to a bank or something like that. And so I think what's key is like reorienting to recognize that trust can be built primarily in a relationship and we can rely on each other, which is a big shift for especially Americans. We're so individualistic. We're so scared of one another. We're so, you know, we have like this fear that somebody's going to let us down. I think for sellers, realizing that that downside is actually pretty small. You know, in Oregon, that's a $15,000 6-month process to get the property back. And so you weigh $15,000 and maybe some headache with, you look at any amortized loan or any loan process and you go, wow, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars of upside. So the seller has an incredible upside if they're willing to do it. In my situation with that triplex, you know, doing that transaction over just 5 or 6 years, they were going to make $250,000 on their $700,000 note. That's a lot. You know, that's a sizable difference. The other thing is the seller doesn't have to pay taxes until they receive principal. So on that $700,000, if he had sold it, you know, got a bank loan the normal way, it would immediately shrunk to about $540,000. He just, boom, right away lost $160,000. Now he has to take that $540,000 and reinvest it at a much higher rate than the interest rate he can offer me. He'd have to go find 8 or 9%. Return out in the market with 540 versus I'm going to pay him 5%. It's a stable asset. It's secured on a property. It's not going anywhere, you know? And so the security is a huge part of it and the upside for the seller financially and the tax savings is really the motivation for them.
So it's really delayed gratification, right? It's cash out now or take small payments over the next five, seven, 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you really did just describe a win scenario. And I have to believe, obviously, you're skilled in how you deliver that win, because for a lot of people, it might be difficult for them to explain the benefit for both parties. How could someone learn to talk the way you talk? I mean, you made it sound like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. But for a lot of agents, going back to lead generation, they don't lead generate because they don't know what to say. How did you even learn how to talk this way?
Yeah, I think community. I surrounded myself with people who were doing this all the time. You know, they came out of that same program. There's a few thousand of us across the US and we rely on each other. You know, we get into a conversation. Oftentimes we're talking to the same people, you know, and we'll still problem solve together. Portland has a really collaborative mindset. And so it's just really beautiful. I can call somebody up and say, hey, I'm trying to solve this problem. This person needs this, that, and the other. How would you go about this? And you can just start getting creative because you're all used to doing this kind of creative thinking. You know, I'm going to be launching my book and also some e-courses, trying to just promote this way of creativity to help people get away from the banks. You know, it's not that I'm, you know, hate banks, whatever. I have a lot of bank loans too. It has its purpose, but I think it's just been overused and our communities are really suffering because all that capital is leaving our community and going into Wall Street. You know, that's it. Every, you know, if you look at a mortgage and how much people are paying on their interest the first 5 years, all of it is just going to a financial institution. If we could collectively redirect that back into our neighborhoods, I mean, I think we would just see thriving communities just by doing that.
So you mentioned a book you have coming out. Are you talking about how the power, because what you're talking about is really community development and, you know, community reinvestment and that type of stuff. What's the book going to be called? What's it going to be about?
Yeah, so the book is called Bank on Your Neighbor. Should be out March or April this next year. I'm just going through the editing process right now. And I'll have some e-courses. I'll have just a very basic package so that anybody can, you know, get into it for just a couple $100 just to learn the comprehensive, you know, this is how seller financing works. This is how you find your seller. This is how you talk about it. This is how you can structure a deal. These are all the creative terms you can consider. A lot of that same stuff is going to be in my book. My book is going to be deconstructing the 6 money myths that keep us trapped in poverty. Here's 5 chapters on how to find your seller, how to talk to them, how to structure a deal, how to make sure it's a win, and then how to take it to that next level, that really creative moving notes around and involving capital partners and involving friends and family so they can grow wealth alongside you. And then the last portion is that real self-determination aspect. You really can't bring any of this into your reality until you learn to transform your mind, your habits, your way of thinking, your way of being. As you guys know, as high-performing folks, like, you know that mindset is everything. And so just teaching those mindset skills and to build community around these things so that people can implement the lessons I'm teaching.
That's fascinating. And that's wonderful. And I'm excited about it. I can't wait till it's out so I can buy it. How do you help teach mindset?
Yeah. So I actually created 10 practical exercises that people can do. Anything from doing like a friend audit, like who in your life is really supporting you? Who are the 5 people you really surround yourself with?
That's a dangerous audit. You gotta be careful with that.
Yeah, it's a dangerous audit. Yeah. You start looking at your life, you're like, wow, this person's always like dragging me down and they don't believe in my dreams, to, you know, going out and doing 100 days of rejection, getting really used to hearing no. Go to a McDonald's and ask for a burger refill. Like, they're not going to give it to you and it's okay. You will survive that rejection, you know, just giving people some really practical steps to start to shift their mind. You know, Miracle Morning is a great book and resource, you know, just to learn how to meditate and think differently and do affirmations. So I'm just giving people, like, these are the 10 things that I personally did in my own life during that transition from social worker to real estate investor that actually helped shift my mindset, helped me reimagine what was possible for my life. And doing those things is critical, because if you just read a book, nothing happens.
Well, Melissa, one of the things that a lot of people struggle with when you think about creative financing is you create this note with the seller that you talked about. There was a $700,000 note. The loan stayed in his name, though. So how did he sell the property with the loan staying in his name? Because that house wasn't free and clear, right?
Oh, in this situation, it was actually free and clear, but you don't need it to be free and clear. And I'm so glad that you brought that up. Mm-hmm. Whatever equity that somebody has, whether it's $100,000 or the whole thing, they can lend that equity. And so when you think about, let's say there's a homeowner and they own a house that's worth $500,000, but they have $200,000 in debt. Well, either the buyer needs to bring a $200,000 down payment to wipe out that bank loan, or they can get a bank loan for the same amount. And that keeps the banks only holding so much of our assets, right? Mm-hmm. So they get a $200,000 new bank loan, which, what is 5% down or whatever the, you know, the minimum down payment is, all of a sudden the capital required to buy that property goes down significantly too. And then the seller can hold that other note, that $300,000 note. And so that's really where the monetization comes in. And because it's in a second position, they are often able to charge more for it, right? Instead of 5 or 6%, maybe they're going to charge 8 or 9. But it's interest only. So when you look at the overall payment, it goes down. Whatever the bank would have offered is going to be still more expensive than a seller financed package like that. And what's great for the seller is they're charging 8-9% and they're going to buy their house at 6 or 7. So they're going to cash flow that difference. Mm-hmm. And so it's a real win holding a second mortgage like that. And you can get super creative and realtors can seller finance their commission too. And especially if we've been in this conversation with the NAR settlement, you know, a lot of realtors are really nervous about that conversation. You might get into a situation where the buyer's very, you know, financially cash poor. They're really struggling and they want to get this house and everything's sort of coming down to this final moment of your commission. We've all gotten to that moment probably by now. And you can say, you know what? It's okay. Why don't you pay me $50 a month for the next 5 years? You can finance my commission.
Now that is creative.
Right? And then it's like, oh, well, I can do that. Yeah, you do deserve to get paid. You did work for me, but I just don't have $15,000 right now. And so, yeah, it's so creative. Whatever equity is there, even the commission can be seller financed.
Yeah, it's interesting you say to apply this concept to commission. There's just so many different things you could apply this mindset and this seller finance concept to. Before we started recording, I was sharing with you that I met a man on a plane who, that's the big joke by now. Also, by the way, like every time I'm on somebody's podcast, I say, I met a guy on a plane. It's like the joke of the day. Like, you met a guy on a plane? Yeah, I did. I met a guy on a plane and he was telling me that he owned a veterinary business, mm-hmm. not like cats and dogs, but he lived out in the farmland, like pigs and horses and cats, like really big money type stuff. And he couldn't find anybody to buy it when he was ready to retire. So he seller financed it. Mm-hmm. And this was literally on my way from our TED Talk, Melissa. So I was fascinated by this conversation. And I wanted to know all the ins and outs about how he seller financed this veterinary business that he owned. And I just thought, it was, people aren't just doing this for real estate. People are doing this with businesses. And then on the next flight, I met a guy named Clinton who owned an automotive business. Mm-hmm. And he also sold his business, seller financed, not just the business, but also the land that it sat on, you know, and it was pretty unique because he had was one of the only licenses allowed in that city to have it. So, you know, he structured it a certain way, but you can apply this same mindset to a lot of different things, to the point of I seller finance the market center that I'm the operating principal of, you know, and there's so many different ways that you can seller finance things and apply this concept. So for people listening, if you have a business idea, you want to buy a business. We also had somebody on named Fee Gentry who talked about buying businesses. That's her thing. She's looking for people who are going out of business or are trying to retire, and she buys their business. But the seller financing concept applies to all of this. It is a tool that we should learn more about. And I love your approach to it, which is about building communities and community reinvestment and not just building big bank, but we're building each other up. You're doing a favor really to these sellers. They're winning and you're winning and everybody's winning. It is like my TED Talk called the ultimate win, you know,
yes. It's
the ultimate win. So I think all of that is so beautiful. And I think we should all learn more about how we can be in business with each other.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't recognize that seller financing was how we used to buy and sell properties before the banks got involved in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. We've just been conditioned to think this is how it is, but it's only mm-hmm. been this way for less than 100 years. And we can really take that power back personally. And so many wealthy people, this is how they do transactions. This is how commercial does transactions. This is how land sales happen. And it's like banks are not involved in all these other sectors, but because the consumer world is not that familiar with it, they don't access it. And I think the really beautiful thing that we have as realtors is we have this opportunity to educate our clients and be at the front lines of a change like this, where we can empower our clients. And it's our duty. We're supposed to tell our clients every option they have available, right? And it's on every real estate form across America. But if you ask realtors in an office, how many of you have done a seller finance transaction? You get like maybe one or two people that have any familiarity with it.
Well, I think people try to shy away from it. They try,
yes.
You know, and honestly, there's probably a lot of misinformation out there about mm-hmm. it, because you just taught me something new. I thought that people did have to, I thought there was a clause where they would call their note due if you sold the property. So, you know, so I assumed all the time that you can't do this unless it's a property that's free and clear. And you just taught me something new that's not necessarily true at all.
Yeah. And sometimes they're allowed to have wrap notes and stuff like that. But a lot of times it's just you can wipe one bank loan out for another. It's that simple. And it takes the down payment size down. It takes the overall payment much lower. And the seller walks away with an annuity. You know, they get to mm-hmm. turn their equity into something that could carry them as long as they want. Maybe it's only 5 years, but maybe they want money for the next 20 years. They get a $2,000 or $3,000 payment for the next 20 years. They move into, you know, whatever, maybe elderly facility or with family, or they're downsizing. This is a perfect opportunity in a downsizing situation to, instead of just putting a giant down payment on your condo that you're moving into, why don't you do a smaller down payment and cash flow the difference? And now you have an annuity every month that's supporting you through the end of your life.
I mean, of course, they're taking on some risk, right? And I think people look at risk differently. Like, oh, I'm safer with a big bank, or I'm safer with than an average person. But even for you, there's some risk in it. And we did an episode one time on risk aversion. And, you know, people have different varying levels of risk. We found out that Daniel likes to go to Vegas and he'll risk it all, you know, and I played bingo one time and I'll never do it again, you know. Mm-hmm. And so how do you manage the in-betweens of how much risk should you take in a deal like this? Or talk to us about risk.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I'm trying to put together is a team, one being the real estate attorney who would be drafting up these notes, and the other one being actually a lender. Lenders can underwrite, whether it's for seller finance or whether it's for a bank loan to be repackaged. And so I think part of minimizing the risk is professionalizing this experience for people mm-hmm. where there's actually an underwriter involved who shows you, okay, that this person would qualify if they're buying a bank loan, or maybe they're not, but this is the reason. You know, a lot of times the reasons I don't agree with, somebody who doesn't have citizenship can't buy a home. I don't agree with that. They've been paying into the system. They've been paying taxes for a long time. They work hard. They should have the opportunity to buy property. But with the way the banks are right now, they can't do that. A lot of self-employed people are blocked. And so mm-hmm. I think taking the same lending criteria and putting it that same test to buyers, because we don't want people to fail, right? You know, like in my situation, I was buying a triplex with $500. We were working off of my character and my drive. But at the moment, I would not have qualified for that loan. Yeah. But there was an allowance there because it's a person to person. And he trusted that I was going to work really hard and I didn't fail him. So you can make that accessibility. You can choose that. Or you can just stick to the same bank principles and have this knowledge that this person has been approved and they would be a solid buyer. But again, that risk is also very low, right? The downside, $15,000. You get the property back, you get to resell it. Upside, hundreds of thousands of dollars that we've just been giving to the banks mm-hmm. because we think it's safer. Mm-hmm. So like when I talk about risk, I'm like, which is more risky? You will guaranteed lose hundreds of thousands of dollars, giving the bank the opportunity to make money on your equity. Or you may, in like a probably less than 5% or 2%, very, very low rate of foreclosure, particularly for seller financing because of that personal interest. The risk is so low, but the guaranteed loss is there already, but people just don't see it that way.
Wow, you're smart.
I thought about it a little bit.
Yeah. No, this has been really great. I appreciate you coming on. To your whole point about getting out and meeting people, I'm super glad that I met you. at our TED Talk. I think we met a lot of really cool people that we can probably count on throughout the years now, and getting out and meeting and learning new things and taking a little risk. And I'm very excited for your book. Please make sure to let us know when that comes out, and the e-courses, so somebody else can say, hey, I took a workshop and now look at me now.
You know, right.
We want to take your workshop so we can come back and say, look at us now. We took a class. Melissa, if there's one thing you wanted to leave our listeners with, what would that one thing be?
Yeah, that there's something really beautiful when we invest in one another as human beings. And I think, like, the as much as it is to build wealth and as much it is to, like, build financial freedom, the thing that is far more rewarding is creating a situation where you know you're bettering the lives of somebody else while you're bettering your own. I can't tell you the wealth that's brought to my life and how it's spread, just being able to witness what I've been able to do for other people's lives in the process. So, yeah, wealth is bigger than just your bank account for sure.
I love that. That's awesome. Perfect ending. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you. And I was just going to say, you can find me at melissadorman.com. That's where all the things will be whenever anybody does want to find out more.
Perfect. Well, thanks for being here. Daniel, thanks for being my co-host. And thank you all for tuning in to another fabulous episode on the Color of Money podcast. Till next time, friends. Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information. Warning. You must comply with the TCPA and any other federal, state, or local laws, including for B2B calls and texts. Never call or text a number on any do not call list, and do not use an auto dialer or artificial voice or pre-recorded messages without proper consent. Contact your attorney to ensure your compliance.